Welcome to Amandla, The Power Within, a podcast about the questions we all face as we navigate life, love, work, purpose, and the absurdity of middle life. Together, we'll laugh, learn, and dig deep into what it means to face this season with courage, grace, and authenticity. Let's unlock the power that's already within us. Thank you so much for joining us again for another session of Amandla, The Power Within, with myself, Mpeo Nkosi. And today, as you guys would know, everything about this podcast, my intention is really curiosity. And curiosity, because it shatters silence, unhealthy silence, and privacy. And the topic that we're going to be speaking about today is very close to my heart and my body and my mind, because I am now 44 and I think I might be going through perimenopause. I still need to check with my doctor, but of course, because of Dr. Google, I've already looked up all of the things, and in looking, probably for the past 2 years or so, I've been trying to find material that I could find relatable. And one fine day, I bumped into a book on the net called The Perimenopausal Globetrotter, written by a South African black female, Gloli Madlala. And she is in studio with me today. She's an internationally recognized menopause coach, a well-regarded menopause advocate. If you follow her, you'll see she actually speaks everywhere. It's insane that it took me so long to find you. A self-published author of the book, The Perimenopausal Globetrotter, which you will have seen on my Instagram and which you will have a link to in the notes. She's a public speaker, menopause policy advisor. She's got vast personal knowledge and experience, which I love. And you guys know that I always bring people who have personal experience. She's a contributor and ambassador to a site called Dahlia, D-A-H-L-I-A, dahlia.co.za, which is a South African-based menopause research and educational platform. So, Gloli, welcome.
Wow. Thank you so much for the invitation.
I'm so excited to speak to you because, honestly, I am in that transition phase that feels like you are losing your mind, literally. And it is so crazy because I know that you went through early menopause, and we'll touch on your story in a bit. But I think in order to bring the listener in to kind of what we're going to talk about and why this topic and why it's important, it is a phase of life that every woman is going to go through if they live long enough. And sometimes you don't even have to live that long to go through perimenopause, at least. So I think before we even explain early menopause, perimenopause, and menopause, let's start with the hormones that affect those. Those things only exist because of three hormones, right? Estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you explain what they do other than reproduction? Because I do feel like at school, we heard those names, but it was all about reproduction. I feel like I left school understanding that your periods start, you can have babies somewhere in between, and at some point, very far in the future, not where I think I am now, very far in the future, your periods will stop, and that's about it. But there wasn't anything in depth, although let's be fair, we probably need to call the Department of Education. There's a lot of things that we don't learn about adulthood. You know, adulting kitabiti. In my mind, diabetes, seriously. So let's just talk about those three hormones first. Say hi to our listeners and tell us what those three hormones are other than reproduction in our bodies.
All right. A warm greeting to everybody in different corners of the world, wherever they are, where they're going to listen to this. I think it's going to be an incredible conversation because I believe that we're both going to mask off. We're not trying to sugarcoat, window dress this subject because I think it's been done such a great disservice. So it is up to us to make sure that we go to all corners of it. And I'm glad that you want us to start at the foundation, which is just talking about the hormones. Because we know hormones, but we don't really know when we say hormones what we're talking about and the different hormones for both males and females. So with females, the three most important hormones, as you've put it, is the estrogen, which is responsible for our functioning from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet, even though we've been led to believe that it's all about our reproductive functionality. But when you think estrogen, and we're going to use layman terms as much as possible so that we don't leave anyone behind.
Yes, please don't confuse us. I feel confused.
Already. The phase of life is so confusing. So estrogen is the hormone that is responsible for our functioning from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet. You think digestive issue, it's got a role to play. You think skin, it's got a role to play. You think bones, it's got a role to play. You think weight gain, weight loss, it's got a role to play. You think anything, it is part of it. That is why when it is depleting as we get older, then we are fraught with a number of symptoms and we can be confused, because then at that time, then the estrogen is going haywire in preparation for it to get to a point that we're going to speak about later. And then there is a progesterone. In the simplest of terms, it's just the pregnancy hormone more than anything. Because when we are about to go to our periods, the communication in the body, it is between like the estrogen and progesterone. And we don't understand that the neurotransmitters and... I can't think of another word to use, as I said, that we're going to do it as simply as possible. But it's like the communication between the hormones in our bodies. So as we know with the periods, that the process is about the egg getting prepared. If you're going to be having sex, then you will fall pregnant and all of that. And if you're not falling pregnant, then it gets dropped. And then that's how you end up getting the period, simply. And then with the testosterone, we always think that only men have got testosterone. But as women, we do have testosterone, and it's also responsible for our mood, just like also estrogen does play a role. But yes, our mood gets affected a lot by that. And things like our muscle mass also. For example, you find that even when we go to gym, we are thinking that we want to be buff, but we find that we struggle though to be as buff, even if we to do the same exercises as a male figure, because then male has have got more testosterone than women, but we do have testosterone that is there from inception. It's not like something that you have to go get over the counter for you to have testosterone. It's just that it is in lesser quantities, just as men have got a bit of estrogen also, but it's not the dominant hormone in their bodies. So testosterone is more than also just for libido or sexual performance, but it affects the things like our mood and muscle mass.
So do you know what I found so interesting, especially after reading your book, which forced me to even go and read more? I mean, it's very detailed, and I love that in the book, The Perimenopausal Globetrotter, you show us the research, you explain medical terms, but you also, of course, give us your personal experience. But what I didn't know, and I had to be very honest with myself about that, is exactly how much and how interlinked these three hormones are. And the fact that, of course, if once they start decreasing, it's going to impact all of those things, you know. So understanding that the lubrication, for example, of the reproductive organs, the sexual organs, is estrogen and it's testosterone. Having a sex drive, whether low or high, comes from your testosterone. You know, progesterone and testosterone, as well as estrogen, is your bone density. So that really started to explain, because you know when you hear about the symptoms, which they're like 34 key symptoms according to your book, many more as they come, you kind of understand why the list is so long. Because if all of these hormones are involved, that list would be so long. Right. And some of those symptoms, and I think before we go into the different stages of menopause, we can maybe talk about those symptoms so that you can talk a little bit about how they might fluctuate depending on which stage of menopause you're in. But it's like we know the standard things, hot flashes. Right. And if you don't have them, you're like, I don't got problems.
Yes.
libido, you mm-hmm. know, a decrease in sex drive, but also a decrease in the moisture, mm-hmm. Right, in your sexual organs, painful sex, for example, thinning hair, you know. But there's so many other things that go into play. But it's almost like we know that your period is going yes. to stop. You're going to start getting hot flushes. You're thinking about the old woman in church or the woman, your gogo or whatever it may be. And, you know, when they say that you get a low sex drive, whatever, because you don't associate sex with people who in your mind are that old, yes. you're like, it doesn't matter. Why do they need it by that time, right? Which is very unfair. Very unfair.
Everybody deserves
a nice time.
Yeah.
So talk to me about these 34 symptoms.
Okay.
And maybe then bring in for me what the different stages of menopause are in terms of, you know, from your peak reproduction right up to the time that you can't, and why they're termed differently.
Okay. With the symptoms, we just, I think for the better clarity, let us group them according to the physical symptoms, the emotional symptoms, and the psychological symptoms. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time we focus on the physical symptoms because I guess they're more evident. And I like that also you are making sure that we are saying that the symptoms are not the typical poster symptoms that we keep getting told, because that's when most women miss their transition, because they are expecting the symptoms that they keep hearing about. For example, just to say the direct opposite of a hot flush, it's a cold flush. Some women really get cold, and if they are getting it, then they're not connecting it to menopause. And we spoke about loss of libido, vaginal dryness. In some women, it's exactly the opposite. Suddenly, their libido shoots through the roof.
Could that be because of testosterone, their testosterone levels being a little bit higher than the other two hormones?
Yes. And then since that is happening, they are not then thinking about it. We are told about irregular periods. And when women are not struggling with irregular periods, or sometimes they've just given birth, then that's the last thing on their mind when they are presenting with some of these transition symptoms. You've mentioned the hair thinning. Anything that can fall off in terms of hair, whether in our private areas and the hair, it happens. But then the opposites also, hair can grow in places that we don't want it at. Mm. Whether the chin hair, we've seen women suddenly saying that I now am growing a beard. Mm. Now I have to pluck my facial hairs. What is going on? Mm. But because you're not taught about that connection again, they just look at it as a random thing that is happening. So anything that can dry, it dries out. Dry scalp, dry skin, dry eyes, dry mouth. Hence, you find women suddenly always want to drink something, because if your mouth is dry, automatically you're going to have that smell, you know, like you feel like, why is my mouth suddenly having this weird smell that I can never put it into anything. So anything and everything that can go dry, it dries out, because lubrication is tied to that. Hence, even the vaginal dryness. You find a woman saying that I've been using this skincare range for the longest of time, but suddenly it is not working. And if it's winter, you're going to just drag it off to winter up until maybe then in summer.
It's still the same.
Then you're like, okay, maybe there's something that I need to look into. But even if you look into it, normally you'll just go to the dermatologist, not thinking, because we're not clued up about hormones again. And then gum issues. Women start having bleeding gums, receding gum lines, teeth falling off and all of that. Yet again, keep running to the dentist and you are saying like, maybe I need to change my oral hygiene, but you're not understanding what is the connection due to the hormones. The ringing in the ears, for some women, the itchy ears, the itchy skin, and some women cite start getting messed up.
I know. I went from 2020 vision to wearing bifocals in 18 months. I don't understand.
And it's like, whose body is this? Whoa. Because that's another thing. You start keep questioning, like, whose body is this? Because you start presenting with things that you never, like weak and brittle nails. And you like, lack of vitamin D, kwenzakalani. And like the joint pain for some women also, achy joints and all of that.
Getting out of bed can be so difficult sometimes.
And
you
the
know?
Cracks and the cracking and the whatever.
Just walking like from bed to the bathroom in the middle of the night in or the first silence, thing in the morning.
You hear this.
It's like you also feel like it's so sore and so stiff because there's clearly no lubrication to the joints. And because of all of those different hormones and what they do, it explains why some of that happens.
Wearing your high heel shoes, suddenly you're like, you know what, there's no way. Suddenly Green Cross makes sense that
not Green Cross, but
okay, we've got better options obviously. Back then you'd see older ladies suddenly moving from high up there to lower.
Yeah.
But they didn't have the vocab or they wouldn't tell us that down there, you know. digestive issues. Suddenly the foods that you used to eat without any issues, you suddenly cannot tolerate.
Or you develop new tastes
then
of things you never used to eat before.
For example, with me, I never used to like liver. I never used to like spinach. I never could handle tomatoes. But suddenly my body was gravitating towards those things.
I had an artichoke the other day and I enjoyed it. What? What is that?
Whose taste buds are these? What is going on? So the physical symptoms are quite a lot. I mean, the fluctuating weight gain, again, you're still eating the same way, but suddenly you're putting on weight and you're confused what is going on. The insomnia, the bladder issues, you take like a sip of water
and you need the
and
bathroom.
Then suddenly it feels like you've drank 2 liters of water, the endless then bathroom trips, whether during the day, at night, you just keep waking up, moonwalking to the bathroom. And the opposite of the hot flushes, because hot flushes, I mean, is what happens during the day. And at night is the night sweats, which can be so bad that they disturb the quality of sleep. Some women, it gets so hectic that they just get so drenched. They have to wake up in the middle of the night to either change their sleepwear or change their bed linen, which can also be an embarrassing thing if you are sharing your bed with someone and you do not know what is going on. Mm. I've got a high school friend that would say that her boyfriend that would even joke that maybe you've even peed on yourself.
Oh,
you can't
no.
even tell, you know?
Oh, no. He needs manners.
But he meant it in a light
in,
way.
In a light way to actually make like, to make a joke of it, because and we will touch on how the partners can deal, right? Yes. I think one of the things that shocked me were the emotional symptoms.
Yes.
They really did, because I think it's something that people are really not aware how much these three hormones impact your mood and your emotional well-being. And I think we chalk that up to PMS, you know, just the words like, oh, you're so hormonal. So what are some of those big ones?
The big ones is from the maddening rage. Something that really, in the bigger scheme of things, wouldn't frazzle or bother you. It's like your partner chewing. And it's like,
chew again. Try me.
Yeah. It's like, why are you chewing so loudly? And then they just stop mid-chew because they can see that you mean it. And to them, it's like, but that's how I've always chewed. Children playing, and you've always been fine with children playing, but suddenly the noise of is just too much for you to handle. And growing up, I always say that we'll hear some women saying like, oh, are my nerves. And now you understand that this is what they were dealing with, and they just didn't have the right word for it. So this maddening rage, even on the road, sometimes you witness it with some of the female drivers. A slight thing, then they just get set off. In the workplace, they get ticked off by the little things, which can then affect even the work dynamics. And I'm sure we're still going to talk about some of the effects of this in the workplace. But even such, feeling weepy, always feeling like teary, the slightest of things, you are ready to just bawl your eyes out, that people feel like they have to tiptoe around you. And there is a terminology that they've coined in the UK at some point. The doctors used to call menopausal women WW, whiny women, because it's almost like they will always come to the doctor complaining about this and that. And sometimes they'll even say, and some of the things that I also struggle with, saying that there's something that is sitting here, but do not know, like posting on, the, yeah, pointing at the chest, like there's something that is sitting here that you can't cry away, that you can't get rid of. It's just like you are coexisting with it. And only in hindsight, then it makes sense that, you know what, this feeling was feelings of doom, feelings of sadness, feelings of overwhelm, but you look at your life and everything seems okay. So you then you try to shrug it off. You think like, why am I being ungrateful? Why am I being extra? What is going on? And you mentioned like the anxiety that comes with it. And it can even wake you up in the middle of the night and you're wondering what is going on. And that's when some of the misdiagnosis also can happen, because I mean, if you go to your doctor and say, this is what I'm presenting with,
you're getting onto antidepressants, that's for sure.
Probably that is where you're gonna get. So the emotional symptoms are a lot, and then there is obviously the psychological symptoms also. And normally we joke about forgetfulness, the brain fog, yes, lack of concentration,
losing your words,
loss of, yes, knowing exactly what you want to say. And then there's that just disconnect between your mouth and the brain.
The buffering,
and
as you like to call it.
Yes, I call it buffering. And you can see the word, but it's like it's just floating in the clouds. And
you can't find it.
Away. And that can affect your self-confidence and your self-esteem, especially in certain settings. But even at home, you know, the children can start looking at you weirdly. It's like, Mama, but why are you saying that? Like, because you're like, pass me, and you're pointing at a bottle, but then you say a completely different word. It's like, but that's not a bottle, or you mix words up. Like, pass me the book, but you're pointing at the bottle. And they look at you like, what's going on with you? Loss of motivation. Most women struggle with. They, like I always bring this up also when we're speaking about entrepreneurs. You know, you get taught that, I mean, or told that these are the opportunities, apply, do this and that and that. And you've been given all the tools that you need, but that loss of motivation.
And you know, it's like I messaged you the other day and I was even talking to my girls about it, about I just can't find the motivation to move. It is not something that I have generally struggled with. I take breaks from going to the gym. I've been that person. But I'm the person who I think consistently I will go to the gym. I have for the past, I would say, 5 months this year, really struggled. If I do, maybe I'll do like 2 days. That will be as much motivation I get. Even those 2 days where I would normally do a 45-minute session, 20 minutes is more than enough. Then I'm over it. And I remember reaching out to you a couple of weeks ago and I was like, Goli, I am struggling to find the motivation to move. And I think part of what the struggle is, because hearing you speak about the symptoms, the physical symptoms, you know, the backache, the joint pains, all of those physical symptoms, not being able to sleep at night because you're hot or you're cold, also increases your propensity for the emotional stuff because you're not well rested.
No, you're not.
Right? If you're not motivated, it means you're not doing the things that you enjoy. So you, there starts to be a lack of enjoyment for life that can seep in, right? And I think part of the shame, let me say, and I want to call it shame, because that's what, for me, it was starting to feel like. Like I have something to complain about every day. Every day. You know, it really felt like my body is starting to betray me, right? And I say that knowing that I'm only seeing my OBGYN just now, but she better tell me that it's perimenopause. Otherwise, it means I'm dying. I never. Because it really is. It just feels so overwhelming. So overwhelming because it's so many things. But there is this silence, the suffering that we're doing by not talking to each other and understanding that, yes, our parents didn't talk to us about it. And I think, and obviously we didn't study it at school, that made us felt like it was this faraway thing. Yes. I still feel so young.
Right.
Right? I feel like I still look so young. So to have the body
that you know, associate with.
It's like, who, what is this? It's doing old people things and I don't understand.
Is that betraying
and
you?
It is betraying you. That's how it feels.
Especially
feel like
if you're
I'm
taking care of it.
You're taking care of it. You're on multivitamins. You are working. You are taking care of yourself. You know, when I was gymming, I was gymming.
Yes.
So it really just feels like, what is it that is amiss? Until I read the Perimenopausal Globetrotter, and what I loved about it was how relatable you are, right?
That is
you're
one of
so
the visions,
relatable
yes.
because it is so in the context of South Africa. It's in, so in the context of the things that our parents would say, the things that we would see. Mm. And for the listener's benefit, I actually just want to take you through the chapter, some of the chapter names, so that if you are thinking about getting the book, you aren't thinking it's written by some doctor or some old lady. I wish you could see Koli right now. Well, obviously she'll be on a picture on Instagram, but you look so young. You are so young.
Yes.
Right? You are 47?
Yes, 47
right?
this year.
You're 47 mm-hmm. this year. You look young and brightly, but also because, and you will tell us your story just now, because you discovered so early what was going on with you, you've been able to make the changes and be able to enjoy the benefit of understanding. Don't go and treat each of these symptoms individually, number one. Just go and figure out whether your hormone levels are at the right place. But also importantly, I think you've also then been able to decide what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And you've had the time to do that, even though you unfortunately, of course, had it early.
Yes.
But before you talk to us about your personal journey, just to give you a sense of some of these chapters in this book. Chapter 2 is It Started With Auntie Rose. Chapter 5 is My Heart Goes Doof, Doof, Doof. Chapter 8 is Potent Bombs. You know, TMI in brackets. Chapter 12 is Loading, What Did You Say? Then there is a chapter 20, which is Swinging Off the Chandeliers.
Yes, ma'am.
Self-explanatory.
Yes, yes.
And chapter 21, TikTok. And I love the fact that she also goes into menopause and black women specifically, because we do suffer longer and before other races. So really important to think about that. And then dating and men as well, and speaking to your partner and the cultural lens. So it really is a well-rounded, it's a big book. But if you are interested in making sure that you understand and empowered to know what to talk to your doctor about, I need you to get a copy of this book. But Goli, before I go into some of my, you know, deeper questions, please can you tell us a little bit about your story and when you found out that you were going into early menopause, and maybe preface it with explaining at what ages each of these menopauses begin.
Okay. Before I do that, one of the symptoms that I forgot to mention, and I think it's very important, is the climacteric depression that comes with this phase of life.
What does that mean?
It's, you know, there's the clinical depression, and then also you find that with premenopausal women, they will struggle maybe with PMS, and they'll say, oh, things like, oh, yeah, I'm feeling depressed and all of that. And with pregnancy, you find that women, some will struggle with things like postpartum depression. And those, I always say that the difference with them is, you know, that once you get your periods, you come back to normal again.
Mm.
Postpartum, once you've addressed it, chances are you're going to get back to your right self.
Mm.
But with the climacteric depression, it normally shows up during perimenopause, which we're still going to explain. It can show up even at postmenopause. It is linked to this phase of life, specifically with the hormones fluctuating, and then it sends you to this dip. And
so it's seasonal. It's part of the season,
it's
part
of
the
this
stage.
Journey, these years. But the difference with them, because normally the transition to menopause can take 7 years, 10 years, 14 years. Sometimes you coexist with it for so long, you can't like shed it off the way that premenopausal women can say that, okay, then I get better, it goes away. And it sinks women deeper and deeper into this hole up until some feel suicidal and some actually go right ahead and take their lives. Like there right now, there's a case in the UK for a school teacher that in hindsight, it has been confirmed that menopause did lead her to committing suicide.
And I think I want to just touch on that because I think it's quite important when we're talking about these symptoms, for somebody to understand that your symptoms could be very mild, the same way as when you have your periods, when you're young, you could be the person who, I've never had period pains. And then there's some people who really struggle with it, right? The same way as you could have a very easy pregnancy and some people have really tough pregnancies. Yeah. It's the same with menopause in its different stages, because those are in the stages as well. But that it could be very mild, but it does not mean that the symptoms are not there and that you shouldn't get checked out.
And that we should invalidate each other's experiences.
Each other's experiences.
Women, because that's another thing, as you say. Sometimes people can be like, why are they making a big deal out of menopause? It's just menopause based on their experience, because 25%, as you say, will breeze into it. And sometimes, though, some of the 25% that think they breezed into it
didn't.
When you have the conversation with them, in hindsight, they are able to connect certain dots because maybe they did not get the typical symptoms, and that is why they thought that it was a smoother transition. But they were busy being diagnosed with certain things, like, for example, they're struggling with UTIs. But they're not connecting those increased UTIs to that. They struggle with new or worsening allergies. Like every change of seasons, they're struggling with that. But because with them, they did not know, then they think they present to it. Right now, the symptoms are over 100 because more and more women are speaking up about their experiences. Menopause suddenly now is being researched. And I'm sure the list is still going to increase because
it's every different for every
experience
woman.
Is and with this conversation, or even people that read the book, I always say that don't walk away and expect that this is how your menopause now is supposed to look like. Be in touch with your body. Hence, it's important that we know and have relationships with our bodies as young as possible, so that even when we are starting to see changes, then we understand what's going on. So to lay the foundation with the terminologies to make sure that we don't leave anyone behind, when the word premenopause is mentioned, it can lead to confusion. But premenopause is for any woman that is still at the optimum, at the peak of their reproductive years. No changes, nothing is happening. And then there is perimenopause, which is the period that is
the
leading
the transition phase, which is the one that
menopause,
I'd like us to talk to. Yeah,
that has many women confused, wondering what's happening to their lives, because they're still getting their periods. Because as you said, that we are taught that you get your periods, then your periods stop.
And that's from age 35.
Yes, perimenopause normally is from age 35.
Can start at age 35.
It can start, but it can happen earlier. And then with this transition, that's where now the hormones are starting to fluctuate. Because before then, they're just consistent. Hence, you know that your periods are going to come like this time of the month. But suddenly, they start becoming irregular because of the hormonal fluctuations that are happening. And the ages of perimenopause, as we said, is supposed to be about 35. It can take 7 to 10 years. We mentioned earlier that for Black women, it can happen a few years earlier. That is why also then we need to be curious enough for information for our own races, because every ethnic group experiences menopause differently. For some women, it can go as far as 14 years. So you can look at it, say, from 35 till 49. Someone can still be in perimenopause. You're still falling pregnant.
Into your early
also.
50s, yeah.
Yes, you can still be having
your periods. Imagine falling pregnant
and,
now.
Falling pregnant and all of that. And then that's when the most symptoms then start presenting themselves. And then the period leading then to this menopause, which is the 12 months without a period, you only understand it in hindsight. You can't say that when you start perimenopause and predict when you're going to reach menopause because you do not know exactly when your hormones are going to get to that last egg, because I mean, we're born with all of our eggs as women, because that's another big step that we need to understand, that as females, we're born with all the eggs that we're going to have. It's not like we keep reproducing them, unlike men who reproduce their sperm. So as we're growing through life, we shed our eggs in different ways, but the biggest one, obviously, is our periods. And as perimenopause is happening, then we are continuously shedding eggs and they're starting to becoming irregular. And then that last menstruation, you only count it in hindsight backwards to say that my last period was 12 months ago. And then that 12 month, that's when you say that you've reached menopause. So it's a single life event, menopause. And that is why we need to fully understand it. Otherwise, you get women saying that, oh, I was able to reverse my menopause because they had not gone for a period for 6 months. And then when it comes on month 7, then they think that they've reversed it. But you need to count a full 12 months straight with no interruption to say that you've reached menopause. Then on the other side, then it's post-menopause. And the natural ages for menopause is from the ages of 45 to 55, and mostly 51 being the most common age. And then if menopause happens between the ages of 40 to 44, it's called early menopause. And anything that is younger than 40, that is premature menopause, or sometimes they call it primary ovarian insufficiency, which I dislike because it's a negative insufficiency, or sometimes it's called primary ovarian failure. That is why then some women don't even want to mention these terminologies, because there's that negativity, like there's something lacking in me. But yes, so premature menopause is before the ages of 40. Early menopause, ages 40 to 44. And then anything from 45 and above, that's natural menopause. And if you are starting to see some of these symptoms then before the expected age of 45, you cannot just sit at home and confirm and conclude that, okay, I've learned everything. So based on the symptoms, then definitely I'm perimenopausal, I'm transitioning, because you can be starting something else, whether maybe it's thyroid issues. You cannot then just sit back. You need to go for your consultation
to make sure that you rule it out,
which I encourage, because normally, especially us as Black women, that strong Black women syndrome really is to our downfall, because we like sucking up pain at the expense of ourselves. Then we waste time just like figuring things out in our own, instead of going to do the tests that are going to tell us yes or no. And the name of some of the tests that you will do if you're younger than 45, it is like your FSH test and the LH test. And then it's important that you've got an idea.
FSH test, what is it testing?
Your follicular levels.
Okay.
And
your hormone levels. Okay.
And the luteal levels also. And those things, you're more than welcome to Google, or you can read up. I do go into detail the book also. These things are important, so that even if your doctor, sometimes they are not mentioning it when you're sitting across from it, because maybe they're not thinking that that might be the case, then you can ask if it's possible. And yes, the cost effect into it also is a thing. That's why sometimes some doctors don't even want to suggest it.
Because it is costly.
Yes, those are some of the conversations that we hardly speak about. But then you'd rather stomach that cost and know
what it is
than to do all these other tests for different symptom. So rather make sure that you do that, and then you can know what is going on. Because I always say informed equals empowered also. We need to take ownership of our health as women in general, not just when it comes to perimenopause, menopause and such, but our overall well-being. We need to take ownership of it. When we go for consultations, we need to know what the doctor is checking for. If you're doing a pap smear, you need to understand what they're looking at. What is it that is the right result? For example, a few days ago, I went for a pap smear, and the doctor had a student, and then they decided that they're just going to use me as a human guinea pig. Fortunately, I did not mind. But it was interesting even hearing conversations about the difference in terms of how you can tell a cervix that has given birth naturally and the one that had not. Something that I wouldn't have known any other time. But because then I'm listening, then I'm asking my own further questions. Then you walk away knowing more, than because we cannot keep outsourcing our health and well-being to our doctors.
So, I mean, you're raising something which is quite important. Two things for me. One, which is I know, and I'm guilty of it, that I'll go to the gynae, any doctor actually, and they'll do bloods. And they might tell me that, okay, we're checking for thyroid issues and we're just going to do overall bloods. Mm. And you'll leave and the doctor said, I'll call you with the results, and they'll call and say the results are normal. To be frank, sometimes I don't know what results are normal. Mm. I don't know, what results are normal, because I actually didn't ask properly. I saw 7 ticks on there, but he said to me one thing, let's say, for example, that I'm going to check your thyroid. Mm-hmm. But there were 7 things, 7 mm-hmm. vials or 5 vials, mm-hmm. and I don't actually know what he was looking for. As part of that, number one thing is around the fact that there's a question that I think is so important that we ask our doctors, which is the result normal or is it optimal? Because sometimes you're on the normal, might have a range, mm-hmm. I'm just making this up, normal might have a range of 10 to 20 and you are on 10 or you are on 20. That's not normal. Mm. Which means you're on borderline abnormal, right? So you're not in the optimal ranges. So I think that's always a good question to ask your doctors, whether your results are normal or optimal. Mm. I think another thing, Guli, which I think you talk about quite a bit in the book, is just the power of knowing if you're not getting the answers you need from your doctor, you can change your doctor.
Yes.
Don't feel like you're married to your doctor. I know that you say that quite a bit in the book. Like, don't feel like you're married to your doctor. If you feel like you don't have the right doctor, or they don't have the right information, or they're not listening to you, feel free to change your doctor.
Because I think we put too much pressure on our doctors to know everything. And some will not sometimes own up to say that, you know what, I've reached my max, my limit. I would rather you go look for a second opinion somewhere else, you know. And this is not just even when it comes to women's health. Mm. I always think back when I was younger, I used to have like this rash that will grow in my wrist where I've used maybe sometimes dishwashing liquid like a ringworm, and it would itch. Then it will come disappear, and I will continuously go to the doctor. And sometimes she will open her medical journals. Mm. She's like, maybe is this, maybe is that. We'll try different ointments up until eventually I was like, you know what, I think it's time to go look for a second opinion, because you cannot keep going and you're not finding the right answers that you need. But then you find that when you go to that next person, then they're able to, at the first consultation, to call it for what it is. And our gut instinct, I always say we ignore our gut instinct so much. Just because you do not know why you are feeling that discomfort during the conversation, you don't have to have the name for it. If your gut instinct is saying that, let's go look for a second opinion, don't overthink it. Do exactly that.
So when did it start for you?
I always respond and say that I can say in hindsight when it started, because when it started, I was blissfully unaware what was happening. I only knew for a fact at 38 what had happened. But in hindsight, then as early as like late 29 going to 30, like night sweats were starting to present themselves, but I'll shrug them off. And then hot flushes, when they came, I'll put them off to one thing or another. Digestive issues. As the title of the book, The Perimenopausal Globetrotter, I was working as a flight attendant, traveling the world. So I will always try to blame my digestive issues, maybe to the food that I've eaten, that maybe it's prepared differently. It's a different country. So keep it moving. And anxiety. I thought that because we work all these crazy hours, because suddenly before waking up, I'd be woken up. When I say before waking up, before my alarm goes off, I would be woken up by my heart beating up so fast. Mm. And I'm like, is it because I was scared maybe of missing my alarm? That's why I'm getting this anxiety and all of that. And then the brain fog, forgetting simple things at work, whether during pre-flight briefings, you're sitting there, it's a team of 12. And when it's your turn to maybe contribute or answer a question, then you do not know what you want to say, but you knew what you wanted to add. But the moment all eyes are on you, it's like the words just evaporate. And then that led me to starting to feel like a wallflower. I mean, I speak a lot. I'm sure you can attest to that. The number of times you and me have spoken, I'm always going and going. I love people and all of those things, but I suddenly just dreaded going to work. I dreaded social settings. I dreaded anything and everything that I used to enjoy. Even at gym, I used to be that girl that will be in the front, remember all the routine, you know, from the instructor. Suddenly, I'll be... What was the next step? Then I'm forgetting it. You turn the other way and everybody's looking at you because you turn the wrong direction and all of those things. Then suddenly, like, you know what? I think maybe I'm better at the back because this is not happening. And fast track, the symptom, though, that really made me to sit up was climacteric depression. And I only got the name for it afterwards. But suddenly, I just cut out myself. Socially, even at work, I would no longer socialize with my colleagues because, I mean, as flight attendants, you travel, you get to these beautiful destinations, whether you are sightseeing or you're going out for dinners and all of those things. I'll get to the destination. I just want to check in my room, get food. Then I hold myself up in the hotel room up until it's time to go back home. I land back home. Make sure that I buy all the grocery stuff that I'm going to need for my days off. Then I'm just going to be home. Even when I'm home, I just want to be in bed, though. The thought of getting out of bed to go eat, like, nah, man. The body does not need to be fed every day. Like, oh, okay, take a bath. Like, ah, I'm not going anywhere. I can afford to skip a bath most. You know, you go camping sometimes. You can go for a day or so without. So, I'll always have a reason as to why I should not get out of bed. And I'm not noticing what all of these things are representing because I think you're young. You're in a thing. Yes.
And you're young, thing, so you're, yes. you're like, it's...
Yeah, I cannot. And I'm staying by myself. So nobody can notice also all of these changes that, why are you always now in bed? And I love reading. Suddenly I lost interest even in such. And... when I'll be home, I'll start thinking about the peace. Because as I said, that you're coexisting even with the sadness that you don't have the thing, the name for. Then I suddenly envisioned the peace that I was yearning for because I felt like my life is not going the way that it should be. But at a surface level, I've got everything that I'm supposed to have. But there is this disconnect. And I felt that the only peace then that I'm going to get will be with dying. Then that's when like the suicidal thoughts then started like popping in the head here and there, whether taking a bath, thinking like if I lose my footing, slip, fall, hit my head, then I'll die. Then I'll get the peace that I am so yearning for. Driving, then I'm thinking, let go of the steering wheel. Crash, it will be all over. And that is why sometimes now that I know what I know, when I look at other motorists, I always think like, I wonder what she's going through when they are driving, because now I know better, having gone through, like you whizzing past with everything, but people don't know what are you struggling or dealing with. And then I always say that based on the fact that my life story was not, I guess, done for, one day suddenly like the clouds drifted. And then I was like, you know, when you feel like you're waking up from years of a deep sleep and then you're like, this has been me all of these years. And then I sat up, then I started writing everything that I'd been going through for the past couple of years. I wrote everything down.
So all the symptoms.
Yes.
And how long did the depression last?
Oh, the depression, I think it was maybe 3-4 years
of the 6 years that you started experiencing symptoms.
Because I think it was about 3 years, but then you start I think at a certain level, but then you keep sinking lower and lower and lower to this dark pit. So it took a number of years.
But what made you then, because obviously there's all of these symptoms, you weren't seeing then multiple doctors for these symptoms. What then made you think about going to Dr. Tlakula, your OBGYN, rather than a psychiatrist, for example?
Okay, first, after writing this, when I was struggling with the psychological symptoms, as I said, that the gut instinct, I always said that I knew that now I can tell that I'm depressed, but I can tell that it's not clinical depression. I don't need to get on antidepressants. That is just me to myself. But then I'm like, then, but what wrong? Is this thing, though? And then now when I wrote all the symptoms, then with the generation of Google, then I put on Google all of the symptoms, and then Google then said that possibly it's premature menopause, because as we say, the age, I looked at my age, so premature menopause. Okay, they say that you can't then just self-diagnose. I need to go for tests to confirm. And then I went to the normal GP, and I'm like, I'm going to test him. I'm not going to say that I've already Googled. I told them that, okay, fine, this is what I've been struggling with. And he was like, okay, fine, we're going to put you on this medication because I suspect it might be premature menopause, but let us put you on this. And if it does not help, anyway, you need to go do in-depth tests. I took the prescription, and fast track, it didn't relieve the symptoms. And then he wanted then me to go to their network doctors. And you know, most of the GPs, they've got like a month's waiting list. So that GP had 3 months of a waiting list. And I was like, you know what? I don't have 3 months, because I was ready to check out. Because as you were saying that, you need to get an answer.
No.
Because either you're walking dead and ready to. So with me, I felt like that 3 months, I don't think it's going to find me still alive. I needed to see someone now. And that's when I was like, why don't I go then to my own gynae, Dr. Tlakula? And then because he operated old school, he did not need no appointments. Then yes, I was able then to just go through to him, told him what was happening. And he also said that you need to go do blood tests. And then he schooled me that this is what we're going to be looking for. And that's how then when they came back, then he sat me down, gave me a crash, I guess, understanding what this means and my options and all of that.
And I think like that's the reason why your story is quite important, is because you've then experienced it before the time, right? So I'm saying I'm 44 now. So if I had to go to the gynae, like I'm saying that I'm going to go, and she had to say you're in perimenopause, it would be right on time.
Almost, yes.
Right? But for you at that young age, right? And when I say young, I mean like you're saying my diagnosis was at 38, but I know that I was experiencing these things from
years before.
From 32. And I'm thinking about any listener out there who is 32, 35. And I think because of our culture, there is almost this thing that you leave things to fate.
Yes.
Right? That when the man comes, the man is going to come. When you want to have children, you will fall pregnant. When, you know, there's almost like this ethereal belief. And I do believe that life loves you back. I do believe that the things that you are yearning for could be yearning for you too. Right? However, I feel like this computer, you know, I feel like after reading your book, and actually a lot of reading that I've been doing for a lot of the episodes that I've been working on, is almost understanding that it's almost like you're a computer.
Yes.
Right? And if the computer is slow and the computer is whatever it may be, you can change. Sometimes you want to go and change the hardware, but it's the software that just needs changing. Right? And there's nothing you can do about that. It's like there's this computer that is inside of us, you know, that, you know, like God has made this computer, or computer nyan, or computer nyana. And that computer has a way that it works. And you
that
can't run away from the biology.
Yeah.
You can't run away from the biology. And so I know that there's a tricky conversation that I know that black families don't like to have. And I know that black women don't like to have.
Yes.
But around considering, and you know, after reading it, I was also like, whoa, I actually want to speak to my sisters, my friends. Likely I've got a wide range aging group of friends. My sisters are friends who are like 32, 33, who might not, maybe they don't know, maybe they've never said, who might not be having symptoms, but to say, at your next OBGYN appointment, just ask if you can do the hormone test. Say you don't, you might not even have any symptoms, but if you can afford it, ask to do the hormone test so that you know, and you can look at your options of maybe freezing your eggs, you know, maybe knowing that you might have to do IVF later, so that you can go through the psychological acceptance of the fact that maybe you might not be able to have children the natural way. Because I think, you know, after reading your book, you spoke quite eloquently about the fact that even though you didn't want children, it didn't feel good to know that the choice wasn't yours anymore.
Yeah, the loss of freedom of choice. Yeah, because that's what we always think, that whenever you're ready,
it'll happen.
if you wanted children. And also, even if you don't want to have children, just knowing that that freedom of choice to choose has been taken away from you, it does something to you.
Mm.
And the identity crisis also, I always say, that comes with going into that phase of life that you deem to be for older women.
Mm.
Because with anything and everything, I think it's always good to be able to talk with other people for relatability.
Mm.
Like right now, you and me, we can speak about this anytime, anyhow, because. But at that time, 2016, this conversation was not a thing in general.
Unlike in general, now. And you were young.
Yes, so and I'm then sure two strikes against me.
So older women were like, wapap, you. Just wait. Your friends are like, you're aging yourself. Why?
No, they're not there. They don't even know. Like, we love you. But we don't know how to support you with this because we haven't experienced it.
Mm.
And always say that these days, I'm so glad that menopause preparation conversations are going to be a thing.
Mm.
Because, I mean, we're doing these conversations. And also globally, most of the people with platforms are using their platforms to lend to changing this menopause narrative to say that there's no shame in this phase of life, even if it happens earlier, because that's another thing. First thing is like, what did I do wrong for it to happen?
Mm.
But there's quite a number of reasons. For example, when you go for your consultations, the doctors will ask, obviously, some questions as a way of guidance. Your family history. They look at, do you suffer from any autoimmune diseases? Do you smoke? Because those do play a role. And these days you look at it, more and more women smoke.
Mm.
And normally when we look at the cigarette warning signs, normally it's about cancer.
Mm.
We don't get to understand some of the effects of smoking on females' bodies.
Mm.
And then sometimes there is unknown reasons that can bring this upon women before time. Stress also. We are living in a red race these days.
Mm.
We're chasing dreams,
stress.
All these career goals and all of that. So stress leads to that we're not sleeping properly and it messes up our circadian health also.
Mm.
Having worked as a flight attendant, I mean, our lives, the work revolves around crazy, crazy hours. The world is asleep, you up because you're traveling to a different time zone, vice versa.
Mm.
And those are conversations that I never really had by aviation organizations to say that, what are the effects of these crazy hours on women's bodies or people that work in industries that have got also these crazy hours, like even in the medical spaces, nurses have to work all these shift hours. Do they get to have conversations about circadian
about the impact
health
in terms of your circadian health? Because sleep, from what I've read and from even in your book and many conversations that I've listened to in preparation for this, I didn't really, I'm like, you hear about it. Sleep is really important. Sleep is really important as you get older. But then it really comes to bear that if you're not getting enough sleep or you're getting fitful sleep, the impact that a good night's rest has on the way your body functions, not just this component, your ability to hold stress, to manage stress is really, really important. And I do believe, I'm a big believer that our stressful lives in whatever domain that you are in at the moment has got a very drastic effect on what kind of lifestyle diseases or even when normal life stages are going to occur in our lives. Because the same way as our children are getting their periods earlier and earlier, it only makes sense then that menopause would come earlier and earlier too, you know. So I want to jump, actually having spoken about children, I just want to jump to, before we talk about couples very quickly, is, you know, in reading your book, there was a realization that I had about these hormones that begin to have their fluctuation and their, let me say, their crazy entry into our life at puberty. And what happens to us now going into perimenopause and menopause is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're in a household with a mother who is perimenopausal, say between the ages of 35 to 51. And you've got tweens and teens in the house going through the same thing. And I can't imagine the chaos that must exist because of those hormones that are happening to each other. One, as I now realize that even, I mean, I've got boys.
Yeah.
But I remember my teenage son was also quite hormonal. I mean, like, boys don't think they're hormonal. They are. They just don't get periods, right? But there's that hormonal stage that must be so difficult for parents to deal with. And I think you do speak somewhere in your book as well about how that has created a lot of mother wounds because of the fact that we don't talk about these things with each other. Mother isn't honest with her partner and her children about what she's going through. They don't fully understand, which I realize I didn't understand, what their teenager is fully going through. And so there's this chaos in the home that creates a lot of mother wounds for children when they're in their teens. Do you have any advice around how to deal with that, just based on the research that you've done?
I always believe that communication is very important, based on people that I've spoken to, that are parents, that are mothers, that have said that I've had to have conversations with my partner. I've had to have conversations with my children so that they can understand that sometimes certain reactions have got nothing to do with them. It is not me intentionally wanting to maybe hurt them by how I speak or respond. There is a lady that have even told them that because she's still perimenopausal. So she will say that, I know that due to my calendar, you are expecting me to be in this zone around this day of the month. But now there is this additional chapter that has come with it that I cannot know.
I can't pinpoint it.
That I cannot say when.
PMS just doesn't stand for pre-menstrual. It just means pre. It just means so, pre.
Just have that compassion when I respond in certain ways, but be my blind spot checkers at the same time.
Tell me.
Come and let me know that, Mom, when this happened, this is how it made me feel, so that I can apologize to you, because, I mean, there's no way that I would want to intentionally be this and that and that. My forgetfulness also does not mean that you're no longer a priority in my life, because I can forget things that are really important, like your appointment at the salon. And if you do not remind me and I forget it, and then you sulk and you think that it was intentional that I did not take you there, but I honestly completely forgot. So it's up to you to come back and say that, like, Mama, we're supposed to be going to, are you still on track with that, to avoid like the strife that could have been prevented from happening. So it's important that communication and the education that is relevant enough, obviously, to their age. I always say teenagers also have got access now to so much online. They can look it up for themselves so that they understand in their own way that when Mama is saying that she's perimenopausal, what does it mean? Because I've made an example about this other family when the grandmother was struggling with her transition, and the grandchildren, they're being naughty and everything. And obviously she has to scold them sometimes. But then with perimenopause now, it will be a dicey line. Is she scolding them because really they deserve to be scolded, or she was just ticked off because of her own struggles? So they had to sit them down and explain that grandmother is going through this phase of life, and because she was also going to go the route of HRT, then they did tell them that she's going to take this medication that might help her, and it might not help her, but she takes this medication. And then in their own toddler young person's mind, every time she'll scold them, they'll be like, Gogo, did you take your pills today?
Oh, no.
But at least they had their own understanding. So communication and support, checking in with each other is very important.
So let's talk about partners and how they can be supportive before we talk about some of the treatments and lifestyle changes you can make, because we know treatment is so expensive in South Africa as well. So there are things that you can do naturally that can that can help. But before we do that, because, gosh, the partners, I feel bad for them. But I also feel bad for us, because in the day and age now of Google, of being able to find information on your fingertips, there aren't a lot of excuses for us not to have conversations, even if you can't go in depth, because really on your phone, if you wanted to find out what's going on, you could. It's not like when I, you know, first had my child when I was 21, if I wanted to find out anything about what was going on post-pregnancy, I'd have to walk into the library and go open a Britannica. Oh, no. You know, so I understand that. But now there's two components for me, which is the interest that I feel like and the education that I feel like men need to give themselves.
Mm-hmm.
About this phase of life, but also once women understand what is going on with them, to be able to be open with their partners and for them to also, like you're saying, allow your partner to be your blind spot checker. Mm. You know, let them know that I've been feeling weird, I've got pains, although part of my struggle is sometimes I feel like I'm complaining to my husband every single day. And so you start holding things to yourself. I'm complaining to my friends every single day. So you start holding things to yourself. And I think because my, you know, having done a lot of therapy, etc., I know that silence is not a good companion for me. If I'm silent, there's going to be a problem, right? I will sink. And so I need to speak. And so I'm lucky that I have that inclination to be honest about my struggles and to say I'm struggling or I'm not coping or this is painful, even when I feel like, you, I really do sound like that whiny woman that they like to talk about in the UK. But it's okay to whine and know that you're going to be able to get help, whether that's from a doctor, some doctors, if it does turn out that it's not actually perimenopause, then to be completely quiet. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a silence in relationships and a fear, I think, of, especially when it comes to the conversation around sex, when maybe you used to be the kind of person who liked to swing off the chandeliers, and now you just the thought, you're like, oh, I can't, I just don't have the energy. And not to be, you know, or you're suffering from dryness in the area, but you don't want to say we should actually get more lube or we should try different things, or I'm just not in the mood, and be able to go and be able to talk to your partner about that. And it makes me concerned about how many of our elders, because, you know, I saw a stat that said 60% of women actually initiate divorces after the age of 44, 45. And a lot of the reasons that were put for that when it comes to menopause, et cetera, was just around the changing, like your life is changing so much, you're reevaluating absolutely everything. The sex drive, change in sex drive, and feeling like you can't give your partner what they need, or you feel like you want completely different things, and just feeling like an alien in your own body. And I think having talked about the amount of time that perimenopause is, can be anything from 10, 15, that 20 years, that could become your personality. You think that this is now your personality, your partner thinks this is now your personality.
Yeah.
But you're just struggling with things that can be helped with a little bit of hormone therapy. And I don't want to say hormone replacement therapy, because hormone therapy of any kind. So what is your advice to partners? And what is your advice to women in terms of how they can be of support to each other before we talk about remedies?
Okay. I always say when it comes to couples, it's such a broad conversation and it's multidimensional. We firstly need spaces for women to really embrace and really understand that there's no shame in menopause. Because once women understand that there's no shame, they embrace it, then it's easy to initiate the conversation with their partners. But most of them, because they're still tied to your value or your worth is then out of the window, then they'd rather try to keep it away from them.
When you say your value or your worth, you're talking about your youth and vitality, your sexuality, your ability to produce.
Yes. Especially when it happens, as you say, that, I mean, looking at us, you 44, I am 47. You look at us, we're fabulous and all of that. Most people wouldn't think menopause when they look at us. So that's what society has done, that menopause needs to look a certain way. So when it happens, then women are like, no,
I'm not even talking.
Especially if you're still single. Then you're like, who is going to be interested in me? Because you're thinking that no man is going to be interested in you. And it's something that I do touch on in the book, that
you
can still meet incredible people. And if you are informed at the time, also you bring it up, because also people treat anything the way that you introduce it to them.
Correct.
So any man that I've spoken to when it comes to menopause, I make sure that I put it in a realistic light, not in a negative light, not in a positive, but realistic that yes, it's got its own drawbacks, but it's got its positive and its a fact of life that nobody can outmaneuver, as you said, like the computer box that you're thinking that there is certain things, but there's certain things that you cannot change in that computer software. So it's a part of life. And also men, as we are focusing on menopause and all of that, as they're getting older, also their testosterone is also declining and they are struggling with their own things.
Which they also don't necessarily talk about. Yes. I think just being able to talk about those things and how they coincide.
Yes. So for us women, once we are informed, then we can be the ones that initiate the subject in our relationships. And in some instances, though, it's been the other way around. Like I've had a lady that told me that my partner is the one that actually noticed the changes happening to me. But because he had been following you, then he's the one that told me that there's a lady called Kholi who's doing these talks and all of this advocating on menopause. I think you need to follow her. And her first in response was like, menopause, you know, because she was offended. Why would you think me and menopause on the same breath? But in hindsight, she was like, you know what, I'm grateful, because she had spent years being misdiagnosed with all the symptoms as one thing or the other, but what was happening. So it is important that men educate themselves to the best of their ability about this phase of life, and not just for their partners, because I mean for their children, for their mothers, for their siblings. I had a great conversation with William the other time on his show, and I was like, I owe my mom an apology, because now so much makes sense. So men need to understand that this knowledge for them is not just for their partners, but it's just for general. Even at work, they can be leaders, colleagues, they coexisting with women in different capacities. So also, men are leaders in the workplace, so they cannot just say that this knowledge is only for the home front or in their relationships. They are colleagues, they are decision makers, and that is another area that we really need to focus on, the effects of menopause in the workplace. You look at how South Africa is still lagging behind with getting on board and making sure that the workplace is menopause inclusive, because they're still in the decision making position. And if they're not getting the importance of it, then women are still going to continue to struggle. And these women, sometimes then it's his wife in another organization. So they have a role to start and being allies where they are. But if they have that empathy and understanding, because now they are clued up about it, whether through personal experience, because it's happening in their households, or they have become part of these conversations, then we will see that more and more women get catered for. And we'll see also women owning it. With some of the conversations that I do, I have asked a number of women in leadership positions to say that, what have you done to ensure that you lend your voice to help us to change the menopause narrative in the workplace? And most of them, they don't have answers, because they feel like they are fighting bigger battles, because I mean they're coming from positions of women were not allowed into the spaces. So now when they get into the spaces, they don't want to come across with feminine issues. They're coming across wanting to be one of the boys, which is a great disservice for women, because I mean feminine power is needed, firstly, and feminine power comes with all of these other feminine
challenges, shall we say, or life stages.
Life stages.
I think the last thing, and I want to spend just 2 minutes on it, because I think it's a completely different episode. But I think it's important for us to raise it here, because I know you have raised it in your book as well, is just around, as Black people, as Africans, people must believe what they want to believe, but to be careful, the same way as I was talking about the biology of what's going on with you, for certain things to be mixed up with, you could have a real condition that could be hampering you, might not even be menopause, but you're presenting with some of these symptoms. Or it could just be a simple life stage change. But because we aren't speaking and we aren't informed and we aren't doing the tests or understanding what's going on with our bodies, I know that you speak about it in the book around how there can be a misdirection when it comes to either culturally speaking or in the church, where, you know, in the church, they might just say, no, we just need to pray it away. Remember the woman with blood. Mm-hmm. She touched Jesus' cloak. Mm-hmm. Just reach out for Jesus. You should be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, culturally speaking, because you've got tinnitus and you've got ringing in the ears and you're losing, you know, some memory. You've got this irrepressible mm-hmm. rage. You've got these joint pains. You've got insomnia. You're waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Then they're telling you that you need to go and Twasa, mm-hmm. you know, and to be considering some of those things as well as cultural leaders, as people in the church, that if you do have women at a certain age presenting a certain way, that they are, and I think it leads very nicely into the therapies that are available to people, that it's important for us to look at people, not just women, mm-hmm. people from a holistic manner.
True.
Understanding what stage of life they're at. Andropause is men's mm-hmm. menopause is a completely different episode. And I'm sure you'll give me somebody who can talk to me about that at length mm-hmm. so we can give them their space. But to understand that in every single life stage, there are things that we're presenting with that need to be dealt with holistically. So I wanted to just kind of bring that in there, that there is an element that cultural leaders as well as religious leaders have a role to play. And I think especially because, let's be fair, as people get older, I feel like the more spiritual they get, the closer they get to either their ancestry or the church or wherever it is that they find faith, and that faith-based organizations, whether that be cultural or Western churches, need to be able to be aware of the stage of life as well. And I know that it is something that you also picked up quite a bit in your book.
Yes, yes. Spiritual awakening is part of this phase of life for some reason. As you said, that it's almost like a rebirth. And a rebirth is broad. It's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and even financial, if I can even put it like that. It is very then important that we look at this in its whole entirety. Mm. And it's important that every role player is part of these conversations, as it is in our languages. It's still so lacking, as you're speaking about culturally. And if someone was to go to someone for a consultation, because of the disconnect in language, then it's easy to miss out so much because it was never a thing. But then we need to make sure that there is spaces where we bring all the role players, because sometimes a person is going to approach this in a multi-layered way because it's multidisciplinary. And yes, you might go the route of saying that I'm going to take a medication and then I want to involve ecotherapy. I want to involve this and that and that. But all of this should not be in isolation again, like with anything. Mm. You can't say, oh, no, I'm just going to pray it away. Mm. Pray it away, but what are you eating? Mm. Okay, you're eating right, but how are you moving? Mm. Oh, you're moving, but how are you managing your stress? Mm. You're managing your stress. How are you spending time, like making sure that what nature has provided for you is doing what it's supposed to do? Because that's another thing that we neglect whenever we're having those conversations, the role of ecotherapy, whether it's sunlight, whether it's just fresh air, whether it is being in nature. Mm. And those are the things that when you look in hindsight as children, we were spending time outdoors and we were in better moods. Mm. We were fitter and stronger because we were getting the sunlight, which improved our mood and also was good for our bone health and all of those things. And as we get older, life's demands and all of that, then we
spending all your time in the office, in
these
the car.
Things. Mm. Up until then, we go through certain phases in life, whether you want to go say that you went through burnout, then you end up being booked in into some place where you get taught now. Mm. Going back to basics. So it is important that we look at all the options and the avenues that are needed for us to still thrive during this phase of life because you can't just nitpick and say this and that. And also, I would like to just mention it to the people that get to be a bit flippant when they hear someone who's really struggling and they're like, oh no, you just need to exercise. Some of us were exercising. Mm. But you still go. got the raw,
still struggled,
raw stick. So the compassion is very important, that you can give suggestions, because as you said earlier, that sometimes you get tired of speaking to your partner, because I mean, it's like, oh no, this menopause talk is a lot. Now every day I need to listen to you. I mean, I don't even get it, because that's another thing. Relatability plays a huge role. Mm. So if someone is not even getting that relatability, so they're going to struggle to really sit and listen to you. Your friends, if they are the 25% that are breezing through it, they're not really going to give you that. You can see when someone is getting that glazed over look and checking out. That is why it's important, like with anything else, they support groups. We need to look actively to having menopause support groups where we can just sit and just have conversations with each other.
And vent.
Yes, just like, this is what is. Then you walk away like feeling like, you know what, you've let it out.
And I'm not alone.
Yes, like they get it. Mm. As you saw that in the book, I've got 19 reasons as to why I wrote it. And one of the reasons was for the women that don't have maybe the right capacity to express themselves because we're gifted in different ways. Mm. But them getting that thing that I'm not going through this by myself. Mm. It happens to other people. Then it gives them that hope and encouragement. And those that are also having families that might say, ah, maybe you're exaggerating these things. Mm. Then they can be able to say, come listen to this conversation from Amanda. You see that I'm not exaggerating. I'm not going crazy. I'm not being extra. I'm not being a drama queen. Mm. So we need so many spaces for women to be able to just feel seen, feel heard, and also
informed.
Get encouraged. Mm. Yes, get informed, get encouraged, and feel like I can embrace this. I can thrive through it. I can be fabulous through it. I can still continue to show up as my best self. Mm. I don't have to dim my light, because that's what happens most of the time also.
So my last thing that we can wrap up on is, it is, we know that healthcare is not cheap in South Africa. And going to go and see an OBGYN, which I think should be your first port of call if you're worried about any of these symptoms, so that you can have somebody who can listen to these symptoms, not in isolation. You can start at your GP if you've got a great GP. If it doesn't work, then go to the OBGYN. If in the meantime, what are some of the lifestyle things that people must just be considering, some of the things that they can be doing to alleviate some of the symptoms?
Firstly, I always say that the foods that we eat, they're no longer the same as the foods that we used to eat in the olden days. And also, as we're doing better in life, then we go to the opposite spectrum and eat foods that we think that they are maybe sometimes are treating and healing some of our childhood poverty wounds. And then you find yourself eating takeouts almost Monday to Friday. Mm. And that food is not healthy. You're not getting any nutritional value, which is good for your well-being. Mm. So we're poisoning ourselves with the foods that we eat. So food plays a huge role. Try to eat as healthy as possible.
I mean, lots
everything
of fiber.
In moderation. Yes, indulgences are still good. Alcohol plays a huge role also. So we're not saying people must stop overnight drinking their alcohol,
but
just
reduce.
Be mindful, and also check some of the symptoms that might be exacerbated by actually such things. And also, even if you're still a long way off, making certain changes also
now is gonna help
people much, much better. Mm. Spending time out, as I was saying, that in the olden sun. Days, we've seen how our people in the rural areas that still like live as basic as possible, who walk, and when you're walking, then to get to wherever you are exposed to the sun, fresh air, and all of those things, which we are almost deprived of. Mm. Normally, you can spend like almost the whole week under artificial lighting, which messes up our circadian health, and which in turn also messes up even our how we sleep. Mm. The role of our cell phones, our laptops, the blue light from all of those things. Then when it's time to go to sleep, our brains struggle to shut down, even if you're sleeping, but the quality of your sleep is not good.
So having a good sleep routine
is not shutting down. So a good sleep routine, like, when is your last meal before you go to bed? Things like the temperature of your room, the water intake before going to bed if you're struggling now with your bladder issues. And we've spoken about stress management earlier. It's a very big plus, stress management. Talk therapy also. And when I say talk therapy, not that you need to maybe go the formalized ways, because as you were saying, that the cost effect into those things. Then find spaces where you can feel heard. And if you need to start journaling, do that. But also be mindful your journaling, what is the focus on it? Because sometimes menopause can make women to ruminate. You focus also on the negative things. And just understanding that menopause, it does not mean that your life is over. It's a new chapter that you need to invest in for yourself, because then you can get to the other side the better that you were. Read up as much as possible, because yes, we spoke about that our doctors are there, but menopause is under research, understudied, and every woman at the end of the day, you are individual, you are different. So you need to understand menopause for yourself,
because and understand
it is
your body.
Because we're always going to be suggesting this, people are going to be recommending this. You spoke about it earlier that there's more and more known forces, like menopause is the buzzword, meaning also that there is opportunistic now marketing platforms.
And so, products, etc. So just be careful.
Be careful that you don't fall into buying anything and everything just because it is being said. And just continue to take care of yourself. Movement therapy is huge. It's not just about going to gym, but
strength
find
training.
Joy movement joy. Also with this kind, because maybe you're struggling with joint pain and all of those achy things. Leave the house, also meet different people, because menopause can be isolating in a way. It just keeps sucking you away from everything that used to bring you joy. Even at work also, you suddenly pass on certain opportunities, things that are good for your career growth, because you're struggling with it. So those are just some of the things that you need to be intentional about. Mindfulness, when you start feeling yourself like feeling like getting emotional, check what are the triggers. The moment then you are able to pick on the triggers, then before they send you to 100, then you can stop it at 20 before you get there.
Thank you so much. So for me, I think my biggest take out, Oli, is this phase of life is such a long component of life, actually. 10, 15 years, because post-menopause, you're still having those symptoms. They're just not as bad. It's a long time. And like I said earlier, it could become your personality.
Yes.
Being a grumpy old person, right? When you're neither grumpy nor old, actually, by any stretch of the imagination. And there's so much vitality still to be had. You know, part of the thing that I'm loving about being 44, about seeing people who are older than me, is the sureness that they have in who they are.
True.
Their ability to speak their mind.
Yes.
The ability to put themselves first if they're doing the right things. You know, their awareness of themselves and their surroundings, the ability to choose that they want to go this way or go that way. I think there is so much joy to be had if you are honest about what this phase is doing for you. If you've got it, it's mild, it's a breeze. Congratulations, we're very proud of you. And we're happy for you that it is a breeze. If it is moderate or severe, get the help that you need. There is no need for us to suffer in silence. The help is there. The information is there. There are places that you can follow Goli Madlala on Facebook. She speaks a lot about menopause. She's somebody that you can reach out to. I'll also be providing her details for the book, so you can get yourself a copy of The Perimenopausal Globetrotter by Goli Madlala. Thank you so much, Goli. This has been so good. It was exactly what I expected. Very informative. It could take 1,000 conversations. I'm going to put pressure on Goli now, because I'm putting it out in the open that she needs to start her own podcast, which she says she's going to try and do, because I think every single aspect of this topic could be discussed in a lot more depth, you know, and we would be fully supportive of that. And thank you for the work that you've already done. Thank you for all of the time that you took to put together this book, all of the research that you did on your own, all the people that you phoned and that blue-ticked you, all the people that you phoned that answered. I know what a labor of love it was to give us this piece of work, so that it wasn't as difficult for some of us that are only getting to this place now. So I'm really appreciative of this book. I'm really appreciative of you and of your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for doing your bit to change the menopause narrative. And to everybody, let us continue to thrive through this phase of life. Remove the shame, remove the stigma. We are fabulous till the day we exit this world.
And we only have one life, so best we live it well.
To the best.
Hot flashes and all.
Yep.
Thank you, Koli. Goodbye.